Testing.
Cool.
So Sid. No, I'm just kidding. Can you give us an overview of what Aura is and like what your goals are?
So Aura, as a company, hopes to allow people to take moments and experience them in ways that they have never done before. We essentially have developed voice recognition and emotion recognition technology where you can take a moment, like a dinner that me and you go to, and our algorithms can understand when you're speaking and when I'm speaking, and we take all that data and we essentially turn it into art, and we abstract the experience that you've had in a way that no one has really seen before. And usually people think about capturing moments as photos or as videos or as these kind of visual memories. But in reality, that doesn't reflect like what has gone on in that moment, or it doesn't really encapsulate the experience that you embarked on. And so this way, we're kind of giving people a completely different way of looking at interactions and experiences that they have.
Mm-hmm. And like remembering an event.
Yeah. And we're going to be releasing a collection of pieces in April of this year. And the collection is called Shanghai, New York. And essentially, we're taking six people in New York and we're asking them to record a day in their life and the sounds that make New York, New York to them. And we're having six people in Shanghai do the exact same thing. And we're sort of releasing all of these art pieces together, side by side. And it's sort of this idea in art history known as relational aesthetics, where you kind of go to an art museum, right, and you see like a piece next to another piece, and these pieces sort of contextualize each other and start a conversation with each other. And so in this way, we're doing that same thing with two different cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two huge cities in two of the biggest countries in the world, and these two countries are actually, at odds with each other. And so by doing this, we're kind of taking these experiences of individuals in these two very, very different cities, and we're displaying them kind of in this way and trying to capture them as authentically as possible and hopefully start a dialogue from something like that.
So is the art, would the art look kind of like, is it going to be like a photo or is it going to be kind of like a video? Like what visually are we going to be looking at?
It's going to be dynamic. Which means it'll be moving, it'll be a video that you can see, and over the course of time you can see like the development and the progression of the emotions and involvement of the people in that moment over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll kind of be able to look in that piece of art, and sort of if you recorded it, you'll kind of be able to see yourself in it, and you'll be able to see like how, maybe you started off being really happy in the conversation and then you became super excited and then you became kind of angry because of something. And,
mm-hmm.
It's like when we experience a moment or we talk to someone, it's this exchange of jokes, of ideas, of information, of thoughts, of feelings. It's so much. And right now there's no way of capturing, all that nuance that goes into living a moment, and this way will allow people to kind of see and experience as all those things that it really is, as this deeper connection that you're creating with someone, and less as this photo that maybe you've posed for, and captures maybe your setting and captures where you are, but doesn't really capture what it is that you've done and how you felt. And
so kind of like truly candid.
Truly candid, right? Like, I think the biggest problem that we have right now is that a lot of people will sacrifice living in the moment to experience a moment, right? So you go to a concert and you see everyone with their phones out and they're kind of like recording. And while they're doing that, they're sort of giving up living in the moment to capture this moment to kind of remember it later. Mm-hmm. And this way, you can kind of just go about your life. You can record the moments that happen around you and you can turn them into art, and you can look and re-experience that moment in sort of like an abstract way.
Mm-hmm.
See a lot of the beauty that you wouldn't necessarily connect with it through like a picture or something. Mm-hmm. Like that.
And so you are releasing these on as NFTs, correct?
Yeah, so all the pieces are going to be released as NFTs. the reason they're going to be released as NFTs is because, I mean, there's a few. First of all, I just think, like, as an artist in the digital age, NFTs just seem to be, like, the most obvious way to kind of release art. And it sort of allows you to... And in an NFT, there's a lot of functionalities that are kind of built into it. Mm. And I think what they do is they allow you to build a community around what it is that you're creating. And so essentially what we're trying to do through this collection is we're trying to start a dialogue, right? So maybe you're from New York, and you look at a piece from Shanghai, and you've never been to China before, but yet you're able to see sort of the beauty in this experience. It's so different from you. Mm-hmm. And you're able to connect with it. Or maybe from you're from Shanghai and you see the experience of someone else in Shanghai and you see how different it is from you. Mm-hmm. Or maybe how similar it is. But essentially, like, by comparing these two cities, we hope that people will find beauty in things that are similar to them, but also beauty and be able to connect with things that, you know, may seem alien.
Right.
In a way.
So when did you know that you wanted to start your own company?
I never wanted to start my own company. I actually, like, I was very, very against the idea of starting my own company because I'd heard how tough it was, and it was not something that I really felt like I wanted or needed to do. But I had this idea when I was at dinner with my friends in Georgetown, and we were actually at a restaurant on Prospect Street, and I found that the food was so bad, but the conversation that we were having was so good. And I kind of sat back and I saw how different people interacted with each other. Some, like, one guy would be leading the conversation, another guy kind of bounce off with their jokes, like one girl would, you know, say something like super interesting, and there was so much emotion and so much exchange of ideas that was happening there. And I was like, hey, there's no way of capturing this moment in a way that's authentic, in a way that's, like, reflective of what actually happened, and in a way that's cool and interesting. And once I had that idea and I sort of saw this problem, it was something that I was just so captured by and I really gravitated towards. And I think I was like, the only way to kind of solve this problem, like the vehicle to solve that problem, would be a company. And that's why I started a company, sort of to solve the problem. It wasn't like, you know, hey, I want to start a company for the sake of kind of like starting a company. It's like, I want to start a company to solve this problem because that, I guess, structure is what makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm. So how has Aura evolved since that day?
It's evolved so much and in so many different ways. Originally, this was technology that we wanted to distribute to everyone. Mm-hmm. And we kind of wanted, you know, this to be an app on a phone where people could capture an experience and kind of turn it into a moment and, you know, be able to kind of re-experience that moment in a multi-sensory way. Since then, you know, we've been through a lot of different challenges trying to, create that app and flesh out the idea and figure out, like, really what we wanted to do with it. And I think, you know, it's, I can't even, you know, go through all of the many ways in which it's changed, but I think now it definitely makes the most sense to me, mm-hmm. and at least to who I am as an individual. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I'm a globalist, right? I have grown up in Hong Kong, Sydney, San Francisco, Shanghai, Beijing, now DC, and I have Indian parents. And so, you know, I believe in sort of like connecting and interacting and experiencing different cultures because I'm just trained that way, and that's just how my life has gone. And so I sort of believe in this like borderless world of people being able to connect with other people. And right now the world that we're living in seems to be super insular. Like, you see all these countries looking inwards. You see everyone care about themselves and kind of shut off borders. And I think the release of the Shanghai New York collection is sort of a testament to that, or like a response to that in a lot of ways. So, you know, maybe we can see a world in the future where people are able to see the beauty and the difference in cultures and in countries that are not their own, instead of just seeing them as alien. And maybe they'll be able to see how similar their experiences are to people, you know, thousands of miles away, rather than just look at how different they are. And I think we all have this common humanity, And, you know, when you think about creating a technology company, you think about technology as good or you think about it as bad. But at the end of the day, technology is just power. And we sort of want to use that power to connect people rather than to kind of alienate them or fuck with their privacy or, you know, yeah.
So, shifting a little bit, you mentioned, like, your time living abroad and, like, living in a bunch of different countries. How has that experience and, like, your childhood doing that shaped the work that you're doing now? I know that you kind of already touched on that a little bit, but, like, if you can maybe expand a little bit.
So, I sort of touched on that a little bit, but my life was sort of, I was born with an Indian passport. I was born to Indian parents. I was born in Hong Kong. And then I immigrated to Australia where, you know, I went to a completely different culture, you know, assimilated to a different place. And then as soon as I got my Australian passport, I moved to the U.S. where it was a completely different culture. Still an English-speaking country, though. And, you know, I tried to, you know, kind of live there. And then my life had just kind of continued in that fashion from then on, where it was moving from place to place to place. And pack your things, we're going to a different country. And so in a lot of ways, I had to adapt. But then you think about your identity as an individual. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, I am this person, this is my name, this is where I'm from. And the part that's sort of like, this is where I'm from, was always very vague to me. And I always would go to all these different countries and try and appreciate, you know, all the good that they had to offer and take what I liked. And so I had this identity that was sort of a melting pot of so many different places and so many different ideas and so many different cultures. And in a lot of ways, that's been very complicated and sort of understanding who I am. But in a lot of ways, that's been such a beautiful experience. And this project, in a lot of ways, is so core to who I am as a person and what I believe in and how I believe we should look at the world. And so I think that my identity and the way that I've grown up has sort of just trained me to kind of think in this way. And I think that, you know, other people being able to connect and see the beauty in things that are different from them is a net positive. And coming to Georgetown and, you know, studying politics and political science, we see that a lot of these ideas of, you know, being, you know, no borders and being a globalist don't really make a lot of sense. But I still kind of have this very core belief, like, within me that, you know, if we can create more peace and more harmony in the world, then that's a net positive.
Right. So how has your time at Georgetown specifically shaped you as a founder and individual?
So I think at Georgetown, what I value the most is the people that I've met, and the professors that I've met. And I think at the end of the day, it's like it's really all about the people, because I've met so many friends that have supported me. I've been to parties where, you know, I've met people, and maybe we played like beer pong at that party. But now that person has graduated and is working in venture capital, and you know, will send me ideas or good websites, or, you know, will help me find an investor for the company, or will help me do all those things. Or maybe I'll meet a professor, and that professor, you know, will kind of guide me and give me connections. And sort of deepen my thinking and connect me with other people. And so I think at the end of the day, like, the people that you meet at Georgetown, regardless of how you meet them and the relationships that you build, that's what I've found to be the most valuable thing. And I think that's what's really kept me motivated and kept me driven and sort of like accelerated this process in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. All right, hell yeah. We definitely have enough.
Okay.
So we can...
We're good?
We can stop.